everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a special Friday Spotlight episode, and today we're going to be talking about some series and some books and some runs that are easily attainable, how you can get them on digital or through various platforms, really easy to get a hold of, and we think they're worth your time. So if you're one of those people who is still under quarantine or your comic shop closed because of the pandemic, or you just don't have the disposable income that you once did, these are books that are, again, easily found on digital for the most part, and we really recommend them. They're good long runs, deep dives, really rich stories and comics that you can kind of sink your teeth into. So I have Manny joining me and Jay for the first time in a long time, and we're going to go through probably about maybe 10 or so a piece of choices, and I imagine there's going to be some overlap, so just kind of bear with us. Neither one of us has any idea what the others chose, so we're just going to kind of wing it here, and we'll let you know where you can find the books as well. So in no particular order, unless you guys ranked them, we'll kick it off with you, Jay. What's your first pick?
Well, for me, I think my first pick would be with Marvel, because if you go to Marvel online, you can get 7 days free, and you can look at all the different titles you want to look at. The one has Uncanny X-Men. You can watch look at the first appearance of the new X-Men, you know, Wolverine, Colossus, and then from there, you just do the other storylines that fall into that that series.
All right, that's a really good choice. I'm going to jump in here because it's on my list as well. Uncanny X-Men, and again, it starts with issue one. You can find that on Marvel Unlimited, as Jay said. You can get a free trial, or I think it's – I want to say it's, what, like $9 a month or something like that for
basically – right, about $9 a month.
Yeah, for basically anything that's like older than 6 months. There's literally thousands of comics. Not every single comic Marvel's printed, but a lot of stuff. So Marvel Unlimited, definitely a good value for your money. I had it on my list specifically, like Jay mentioned, starting with the new X-Men stuff. That starts with issue 94. And mine was specifically limited to the Chris Claremont era. So that's kind of the golden age of the X-Men, if you will. That runs from issue 94 to 247. And it includes like some early Jim Lee work. The classic stuff that starts in 94 is Chris Claremont and Dave Cockrum. That's where John Byrne first came into his own and made a name for himself, co-plotting and doing the pencils and stuff, inks by Terry Austin. So Mark Silvestri, Paul Smith, I mean, some great, great artists all working with Chris Claremont on that title. So that, yeah, that's a great pick. It's on my list as well. What about you, Manny? What do you have listed first?
So I've listed first, I have, just due to the fact that I noticed that a lot of the trends right now with documentaries and other shows are disaster ones and things with doomsday problems, things. I went with Top Cow Productions, and you go through Image. I chose Wildfire. It's a limited series by Matt Hawkins with Binda Sajic with artwork. And so this short series actually focuses on genetically modified food. And so it talks about the dangers of growing too fast. And so what happens when a biologist named Dan Miller is working on perfecting accelerated plant growth, and then it goes wild. And when things go wrong, they go really wrong, and they end up causing a huge natural disaster in Los Angeles. But what makes this book really good is that it's available on Comixology, but it's also available via the Top Cow Productions website, and you can actually read the first issue for free. So get a little taste. And then one of the greatest things about these books in particular is that Matt Hawkins takes, we've talked about it many times on the podcast, he takes a little bit of extra time, that extra effort to give you a little bit, something called science class in the back, where all of the things that he's talking about in the book, he has a link to, he has a source to. Maybe it's not developed, maybe it's in theory, but I mean, it's a comic book, so you can make it work in a comic book. So it's a lot of fun. Sometimes it's a little, gives you a little bit of anxiety to see that some of the things that he's talking about are actually maybe being developed or something that that is being maybe swept under the rug or things like that. So it's a good miniseries to run, and it can lead you to different places.
Yeah, like Manny said, only four issues. So if you're looking for something a little shorter, that's a good pick. So, all right, my first pick, I'm going to go with something else that's kind of finite, a little more than four issues. In fact, it's 52 issues because it is 52 from DC Universe weekly series back in the day. Tons of really great creators. So written by Jeff Johns, Grant Morrison, Greg Rucka, Mark Waid, Keith Giffen. You've got art, again, because a weekly series, so you imagine they had to get a lot of people on board. And this was really the first weekly series that did so well that it kind of became a thing for a while at Marvel and DC. But we have art from guys like Joe Bennett, Chris Bautista, Eddie Barrows, Todd Knock, Keith Giffen, Derek Robertson, Ken Lashley, Phil Jimenez, Dan Juergens, Mike McCone, Dale Eaglesham, Jamal Igel, a lot of really great covers by J.G. Jones. So this was really kind of a follow-up to Infinite Crisis, which is the series that kind of brought the multiverse back to the DC Universe after Crisis on Infinite Earths, that classic series, shrunk the multiverse down to one particular Earth. So this is about a multiverse existing once again in the DC Universe, but only 52 different worlds. And it's a who's who of characters. I mean, just too many to list here, but, you know, all the characters that you would expect, you know, Batman, Wonder Woman, Superman, but guys like Elongated Man, you know, Ralph Denby, and, you know, some lesser known characters really played a big role in the series. And so because of that, I think it's a lot of fun, and it's well written. You know, some of the other weekly series that DC have done trying to recreate the success of 52 haven't worked out so well to varying degrees of success. But this one is definitely worth your time. It's beloved and for good reason. So I definitely recommend it. And it is interesting that, you know, it is weekly, and each number, you know, it's like starts with 52 and week one, and then 52, week two and three and four and so on and so forth. But it's telling a lot of different stories. There's so many main characters that it definitely almost feels like an anthology. But as it was coming out, you didn't feel like you were missing things or you were forgetting what happened because it was coming out on that weekly basis. So, you know, between the Animal Man storyline, Batwoman, Black Adam, Booster Gold, I mentioned Ralph Denby, Elongated Man, Lex Luthor plays a big role, Renee Montoya, The Question, Steel, Starfire, like Adam Strange, you know, who's kind of on DC fans' mind these days with the Strange Adventures series. A lot of really, really good stuff in here, and highly recommend it. It's available on the DC Universe app for free if you subscribe to DC Universe, or you can download it from Comixology as well. All right, Jay, what do you have next on your list?
For me, it was back to the DC Universe. I like Harley Quinn. So they have one as Welcome to Metropolis. So it deals with her moving with Ivy to Metropolis. So it's kind of a... I think it's issue 14 and 25 of actually the series of Harley Quinn, but you just get the short story of her in Metropolis. It's written by Carl Kessel, and the artwork is by Terry Rachel Dodson, which I love their artwork. It's a fun read, and you see her, you know, instead of going after Batman, now she's going, you know, against Superman. So it's a nice little twist. It was a fun series. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, what's interesting is as popular as Harley Quinn was back then, that series,
good Harley Quinn.
Yeah, that series did okay for a while. She certainly wasn't kind of the third pillar of the DC Universe like she is now. You know, you have Batman, you have Superman, then you have Harley Quinn. So I don't know why. Like, these days, DC would never consider canceling and not having a Harley Quinn series out there, you know, regular Harley Quinn series, if not, you know, multiple. You have the regular Harley Quinn series, and you have multiple miniseries going on now. So it's interesting that that series, it didn't get a lot of fanfare, didn't get a lot of attention at the time, but is really, really good series for fans of Harley Quinn. She's not quite liberated, if you will, from Joker the way Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Connor did in her New 52 series, where they completely separated her from the Joker. But right, like Jay mentioned, in those particular issues he's recommending, she is starting to take the first steps to break away. She wants to get out of Gotham. She wants to go to Metropolis. She wants to get out from under the shadow of the Joker. So kind of the seeds of what Jimmy and Amanda did with her are kind of being planted here. And I will say, as fun as Jimmy and Amanda's series is, I think the series by Carl Kiesel is just as fun. It's maybe not as irreverent gets into the kind of, kind of crass humor that Jimmy and Amanda go to. It doesn't go to that length, but it is a heck of a lot of fun if you haven't checked it out. All right, Manny, what do you have next up on your list?
So my next series is going to be The Valiant from Valiant Entertainment. Back in the day, and by back in the day, I mean 2014, when Valiant Comics was doing amazing yearly events, The Valiant was one of them. The book is written by one of my favorite writers, Jeff Lemire, Matt Kent, with art by Paulo Rivera. So reason I picked this book, and yes, it's a limited series also, but what I hope happens with this series is that because Valiant does such a good job at world building, at teamwork with other characters, I hope that it becomes a gateway comic to pick up some of the other character books from Valiant, which were the majority of them were fantastic at the time. After this, it was followed up by Bloodshot Reborn, also by Jeff Lemire. There was a great Archer and Armstrong series. Eternal Warrior had a good thing going. Harbinger, just really good, solid years of Valiant books. But I think if you're going to start somewhere, start with The Valiant, which is going to give you a little bit of history with the Eternal Warrior. You get to learn about the Geomancer, who becomes a pretty prominent character in some other series as well. Obviously, Bloodshot. We've seen the movie this year come out with that one guy, Vin Diesel. Even though it's a book that contains so many characters, it's really reader friendly and new reader friendly. And I would highly recommend to start there. And then that way you can web your way out to some of the other titles that were doing really, really well at the time.
Yeah, good pick. I think, like Manny said, it's a great series to kind of dip your foot in. If you're not familiar with the Valiant Universe at all, it's a good series to start with to kind of get introduced to the characters. A lot of their main characters get a chance to show up in that series and get some screen time, as it were. I'm going to pick one that is available on Comixology. You can get the trades. There's four trades. And this book is one of those books that really shows the power of the cliffhanger, maybe better than any comic I've ever read, maybe because it was created by a guy who works in television. And so he kind of learns, or brings that thing you do in TV where you always got to leave a little something right before the commercial to get people to come back. Unfortunately, due to sales not being as good as they could be, and also them having a potential TV deal, they thought, okay, well, we have a potential TV deal. It's going to eventually be on either the big screen or the small screen, and then we'll come back to the series after more people kind of know what it is. But it's Hollywood, so as you know, those deals don't always go through. Even though there was a pilot ordered, even though there was a feature film at one time, it hasn't ever come to fruition. So they've never come back to it. And I hope someday they do, because as I said, in the interest of full disclosure, the very last issue of the series, the last issue.
Oh my God. Don't do it, Jay.
Of Volume 4 ends on another cliffhanger. And it's been quite a few years now. And we have not had, we haven't had a resolution. I think, what was it? It was 2014 the last issue came out. So, man, it's been 6 years. So I'm leaving you on a bit of a cliffhanger here, but let me put you out of your misery. The series is called Clone. It was created by David Schulner, pencils by Juan Jose Reap, who some of you may or may not be familiar with. He's done some work for DC and Marvel since then, but this was kind of where he really first broke into the American comic scene. And I will admit, like, his style is hyper detailed. It's almost like a Jeff Darrow type detail. It reminds me a little bit of Darrow. And I remember when I first was reading it, it took me a little while. His art style takes you a little while to get used to. Mm-hmm. He's done some work for Valiant as well. I didn't like it at first, but then now if it comes back, and hopefully it will someday, I can't imagine any artist but Juan José Reap. Like, I don't even know that I would want it to come back. I mean, yeah, I probably would want it to come back as long as it's a good artist. But I really – it needs to have Juan José back on it, because he's become synonymous in my mind with the series. I've reread the 20 issues that exist out there multiple times. In fact, I just reread the first two volumes earlier this week. I'm going to do a crossover with another podcast, and they wanted me to recommend something. And so I was like, what do I was trying to decide. I was like, Clone is one that I always, just because the cliffhangers are so good. It's such a great series. It's basically about this guy that finds out he's been cloned like 100 times from when he was born, and didn't know about it. And what finally kind of broke the conspiracy wide open was Facebook. These guys started connecting across the globe and finding out that they were cloned. So it's a great story. Coming from TV, like I said, David Schulner, who later on in the series, I think starting with volume three, I want to say, maybe volume two, certainly volume three and four, he brings in a couple of other television writers that he works with on a regular basis, Aaron Ginsberg and Wade McIntyre. And it's just such a fun ride. I mean, they just chew up story. It's super fast paced. It's like I said, I mean, I keep using the word cliffhanger, but honestly, it's just so, so good. And I just don't feel it ever got its due. So it's from Robert Kirkman's Skybound imprint over at Image. And like I said, you can get all four trades. They're available over at Comixology. Really, really recommend it. And when I recommended it to Manny and he started reading it, he was hooked immediately as well. And in my defense, I had no idea that it was going to get to issue 20 and then just stop. Yeah. And in fairness to the creators, they didn't know that, you know, they were just going on a hiatus and they planned on bringing it back. And they just, I mean, Schulner's been super busy creating TV shows. In fact, right now he is heavily involved. He was the show creator and showrunner for New Amsterdam, the medical drama on NBC. So he's super busy with that. So I can understand why he never got back to it. But whenever I see him, I always bring it up. Like, hey, man, how about some clone action? It's great. What were you going to say about the series, Manny?
I'm going to say that, I felt the same way, that the art style of it took me one or two issues. But I got so into the story that by, like, the third issue, I was more than okay with it. But I remember then that issue came out and you were like, did you read it yet? And I was like, no, I haven't picked up my book yet. You're like, you were very adamant about it. And we picked it up and it was like, oh my God. And then silence. And then I remember you, didn't the writer threaten to sue you for your copyright and infringement?
No, that was Robert Kirkman. Shirt? That was Robert Kirkman.
Robert Kirkman.
Sue me over the clone t-shirts that we had made. But that's a story for another day.
Yeah.
All right. I think it's your turn, Jay, right?
Yeah. Another one I like, I think it's probably your favorite artist, is by Scotty Young. I Hate Fairyland. It's a fun series. You can get on Image, you can get the first two issues, you can get for free, then you gotta, you know, subscribe to get the rest of it. But the reason I like it is because I like Scotty Young's work. It's a little different. I know, like I said, Jace doesn't really care for it if I remember right, but I still like the work. It's just what if you actually go to Fairyland, but you don't do the right thing, you don't make the right choices, you get stuck there for, what, 30 years, and you're still the same age? But she's such a brutal character, Gertrude. I just like the comic. It's fun. It was bloody, and it was just entertaining.
Yeah, in my defense, I don't dislike Scotty Young's artwork. I'm just not a giant fan of it like a lot of people are. And I haven't read I Hate Fairyland, but Manny's a fan, right, Manny? You've read that series.
Yeah, his art style is great. I collected some of the not so family friendly covers.
Yeah,
it's just fun. It's different, and it's something that even my daughter kind of got into, because she's kind of that type. She has that kind of personality where she she has that, she loved that part, that kind of like princessy style, but at the same time, like, screw you, I'm gonna smash you with a hammer.
Yeah, so like Jay said, first couple issues available at image.com for free, and then you can head over to Comixology to pick up the rest. All right, Manny, what do you have up next on your list?
Up next on my list, something a little different that I've really enjoyed, and I you know, when I first picked it up, I didn't think I was gonna like it that much because the art style is kind of a little off of what I'm used to, and that's Image Comics Ice Cream Man. It's an anthology series by W. Maxwell Prince with artwork by Martin Morazzo and Chris O'Halloran. So I think this is still ongoing. I'm not sure.
Yes.
Yeah, it's still going on.
One shots now is what they're doing now. One shots.
Oh, okay. But I mean, like, every issue is different, and it's I can see why they call it Ice Cream Man, because every issue has a little different flavor. I mean, some you're looking at like drug addiction, some you're looking at like somebody who's regretting their life, death. I mean, there's one issue I couldn't remember exactly which one it was, but it's completely in Spanish. And I thought I had got the wrong book at first. No. but it was great. I speak Spanish, so it was a lot of fun. But everything revolves around this mysterious kind of Ice Cream Man character. And in between some of those stories, sometimes you get a little bit more about who he is and where he kind of comes from, but not too much. The artwork that goes with it, sometimes it's really, really, really disturbing and kind of uncomfortable, and it fits the world really, really well. And so sometimes you'll definitely like one story more than another. One hits home, one doesn't. But I mean, just a variety of different stories. And I know that as of late, all kind of horror books have been doing pretty well. They're a lot more than I remember than being around. You can get this on Comixology. They're some of them are collected in a trade, and it's just fun.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those weird horror type out there abstract kind of books. So it doesn't really suit like my style usually. So I actually haven't read any of it. I've flipped through it and kind of decided it wasn't for me, but sounds like is that a book that you read regularly, Jay?
Oh, I got the whole first series. To me, I got more of like a Tales from a Crypt kind of vibe from him. Mm-hmm. It's like, he's a storyteller, but you kind of see it through his eyes, and sometimes he intervenes, sometimes he doesn't, but it's good. It's a really good series. From what I read, the first series did really well, but then after the whole COVID thing, they didn't do it for a while. They stopped. So they're coming back slowly by doing just one-shots. And I've got the one-shots coming in the mail soon, but that's what they're doing right now with that series.
Gotcha. And you said, Manny, that one's on Comixology?
Right.
Right on. All right, well, let's go to my next pick. It is a title from the New 52, a character that the creators had worked on prior to the New 52, but relaunched it with a different name. So it's a Jonah Hex title, and previously co-writers Jimmy Palmiotti and Justin Gray had worked on a Jonah Hex title prior to the New 52. When New 52 started, they relaunched with an All-Star Western title, which there had been two previous volumes of All-Star Western, the first one running from 1951 to 1961, the second one running from 1970 to 1972. With different main characters like Super Chief, Johnny Thunder, Trigger Twins, Batlash, El Diablo, Powwow Smith, as well as Jonah Hex. So I don't know if DC relaunched it as All-Star Western rather than Jonah Hex to give it a broader appeal. And maybe they thought, well, if this goes for, you know, hundreds of issues and we call it All-Star Western, we can bring in some of those other characters. Maybe it doesn't even have Jonah Hex in it for a while. But unfortunately, the sales just weren't there. But that happened to a lot of the new 52 titles. But it did run for a good long while with Jimmy Palmiotti and Justin Gray writing all 35 issues. Moritat is the artist that started on it. And kind of like Juan José Reap, his style took me a little while to get used to. But he's a super nice guy. In fact, when I was at Comic-Con 2012, I was standing in line for something, some kind of exclusive or something, And I was like all the way across the floor from the DC booth. And as soon as I got done with the line I was in, I hustled over to the DC booth because there was a signing with Jimmy and Moritat. And I was hoping to catch the tail end of it. And literally as I'm walking, I'm like two booths down from the DC booth. And I see Jimmy walking toward me. And he's like, where were you? I'm like, oh, man, I was at another thing. And I tried to get over here as soon as I could. And he was like, well, we already finished our signing. I got to run to this other thing real quick. But let me take you over and introduce you to Moritat. And so he takes me over, introduces me, and then Jimmy takes off. And Jimmy had signed my All-Star Western #1. I pulled it out for Moritat to sign. And then he takes the backing board out and he goes, "How about a quick sketch?" And this guy was so nice. He literally, you know how they have the trash cans in the aisles that have a flat top surface at San Diego Comic-Cons. This guy takes the backing board out of my sleeve and he puts it on top of the trash can and he draws me a bust of Jonah Hex standing there in the rain, scowling, like totally on his own time. Like he was under no obligation to do that. I didn't ask. But he just loved that I had picked up the book, that I knew Jimmy, that I was a fan. And so, yeah, really, really super nice guy. So he handled the art for the majority of the series. There was some other artists on it later on, Staz Johnson. The late, great Darwin Cook did an issue as well. So it's a really great series that celebrates kind of the history of Jonah Hex and his importance in the DC universe. I think a lot of people have heard the name or they've seen the really terrible movie. It doesn't do justice to who Jonah Hex is.
No justice. Series,
yeah, exactly. This series does. It gives you a good idea of who the character is. Jimmy and Justin Gray have a really good understanding of who Jonah Hex is. And he's kind of one of those, gruff, no-nonsense kind of characters, but that really has a heart of gold under that that kind of rough exterior, and they really capture that. So it's a really great series, and for my money, if I'm reading a Jonah Hex title, I pretty much don't want anybody but Jimmy and Justin writing it, and Moritat art would be just fine with me. So like I said, all 35 issues are available. You can get them free on the DC Universe app. They're also available on Comixology. All right, what do you have next up, Jay?
Well, I was going to go with this first one, but I was afraid someone was going to grab it. It was just a graphic novel. It was called Batman the Killing Joke. I mean, that was like – it came out in 88, written by Alan Moore and illustrated by Brian Boland. Awesome book, and it's expensive now. If you try to buy a first print, forget about it. It's like over $80. But if you go to DC Online, you can read it. That one I don't think is free. I think that one you actually got to subscribe for the 7 days to actually read it. But the artwork is phenomenal. The story is really good. It shows how he paralyzed Batgirl, and the imagery in there was really kind of dark for I guess that time. I guess this kind of early for that kind of darkness for the Joker, but he was there, so it was kind of cool. Again, it was a great illustration, and I love the story.
Yeah, that's one of those evergreen titles from DC, and if you're a Batman fan, it's a must read because it explains so much about the relationship between Batgirl, Jim Gordon, Batman, the Joker. What's interesting is just like the kind of the Dark Knight Returns, Killing Joke kind of ushered in a new era of Batman, or helped to usher in the new darker, edgier Batman. And when Alan Moore first wrote that story, it wasn't even considered canon. It was just like a one-of standalone story, but it was so well received and done so well that they did incorporate it. And that's how you ended up with Barbara Gordon as Oracle, and then they put her back under the mask in the New 52. But yeah, definitely a must read for any Batman fan.
Oh yeah, Manny was pretty dark.
Oh yeah, for sure. Do you have something to add about Killing Joke, Manny?
Yeah, that's one of my key issues growing up into that, completely got me into comic books. I mean, one of my favorite comic book lines ever in any book is "All it takes is one bad day to reduce the sanest man to lunacy," and just kind of the monologue that the Joker does at the time that Batman is approaching. It's fantastic. It's great. I'm the only sad thing is I just very unhappy at the way that they treated the animated version of that movie.
Oh, it was terrible.
that was bad. But man, just the progression of it and where it leaves off it's just a work of art, and that, I mean, that's why it's still one of the best-selling graphic novels, you know, today.
All right, I think you're up next, Manny. What do you have?
Okay, so I got probably. I was trying to think if this is where it ranked as far as Rebirth titles, because you know, obviously there's Batman just because there's by default, but then, you know, there's Superman Action, which is like, which, you know, I didn't like Superman as much, just not my character, but what Dan Jurgens and Peter Tomasi did was fantastic. So like, there's like a lot of series that I considered, but, you know, probably top three, the Green Arrow run, the Rebirth Green Arrow run by Benjamin Percy, with the fantastic artwork by Juan Ferreira and Otto Schmidt. I mean, like, a lot of times they're taking Batman as like, yeah, he's just a regular guy. I think more than anyone else, Oliver is more of a regular guy than Batman. I mean, just the way that he's treated throughout this series, where, I mean, he goes through almost everything. I mean, he's dealing with Black Canary and all kinds of issues with them. He's dealing with, Boy and his relationship with him, losing his company, people losing faith in him, being targeted by the police. I mean, just, there's just so much that he goes through. In the progression of this series and the different volumes, it's a lot more relatable than it would be with many of the other characters. He's so flawed, but he's still so committed to serving his city and the people around him. I think it's a must read. I think, and it has a couple of volumes that they can really sink your teeth into. What makes it cool is that you can get it on Comixology, and if you decide you want to spend a little bit, you can also catch it on the DC Universe streaming service. It's one of the comic books that they offer on there.
Yeah, and I'll also throw Stephen Byrne's name in there for the art. So first it was Ferreira and Otto Schmidt, and then Byrne came in later. What's great about all three of them is they handled not only the pencils, but also the inks and the colors. And so you get a really cohesive art style. And their art is all distinctive enough. Like, you can recognize that they're different, but they're similar enough that it's not jarring when you go from one to the other. They're all just absolutely spectacular. Otto Schmidt is especially great at Black Canary. That's kind of where he specializes in. If there's ever another Black Canary title, he's got to be the one to illustrate it. And Byrne, I think he was probably the best at like emotions. And giving the story some emotional weight. And Juan Ferreira, I mean, the guys can do anything, but especially his action scenes are really fantastic. So, yeah, probably. And I've been a Green Arrow fan for a long time. I've read a lot of Green Arrow series over the years, you know, from way back at the Chuck Dixon stuff when we first met Oliver Queen's son, and when he took over when Ollie was supposedly dead, and then Quiver from Kevin Smith when he came back. You know, all those different series, I've read them. Longbow Hunters from Mike Grell, which is classic stuff. Out of all the Green Arrow series that I've read, I think Benjamin Percy's might be my favorite. It's absolutely spectacular. So really good recommendation. My next pick is also available on Marvel Unlimited. I'm specifically going to recommend 69 issues of the series. And this is on my list for a lot of people who maybe aren't the biggest fan of comics, but they love the MCU. We all know that the MCU really took off with Iron Man and Robert Downey Jr. So this is a classic run. Like I said, 69 issues from issue 163 of Iron Man to 231. 163 is when Jim Rhodes takes over as Iron Man. Tony Stark had basically crawled into a bottle, was just a complete alcoholic drunk, couldn't handle being Iron Man. So he kind of gave it up and let Jim Rhodes take over. And so it's kind of Stark's road to redemption, how he basically rebuilds himself. You know, he loses his company, he rebuilds, he eventually gets it back, and that all culminates in issue 200. And then the second half of the run is about him basically, it's classic Iron Man stuff. He's coming back into his own, and the Armor Wars series is in there. There's some interesting new characters and villains introduced, like the Ghost. So it's really, really great stuff. I was right around 10 or 12 between there when this run came out, and it was when Iron Man was one of my favorite characters at the time. And you know, I remember Iron Man movie came out, I was like really excited to see it, even though I wasn't sure about RDJ as Tony Stark. And a lot of people were like, wait, who? Iron Man, who? What? Well, kind of like, you know, Green Lantern in that he's a second tier character. And it's hard to imagine that now, because, you know, now he's a common character known, you know, the worldwide. But this gives you a really great understanding of who Iron Man is, who Tony Stark is as a character from the comic book perspective. This isn't the super snarky, fun-loving Robert Downey Jr. character. But I do think it has enough in common, especially when you get to issue 200 to 231. It does have enough between the technology and the armors and things like that. It does have enough in common with the movies that I think you'll really dig it. So the first half of the series is mostly written by Denny O'Neil, the late great, who we just lost recently in the past couple months, with a lot of great artwork from a bunch of different guys, too many to name. Luke McDonald does a big run. And then right around 200, Mark Bright comes on with Bob Layton inks, who's a classic Iron Man contributor and creator from over the years. And David Michelinie takes over the plotting, I think around issue 210, takes over the writing, and Bob Layton adds co-plot. So you're talking some really well-known creators when you're talking Layton and Denny O'Neil and David Michelinie. So it's classic stuff, again, available on Marvel Unlimited. Specifically, those 69 issues, I think, give you a real feel for who the classic Iron Man character is. And if you're a big fan of the MCU, that version of Iron Man, I think you still will like this, but it'll probably give you a different appreciation for who Iron Man is, and maybe a different interpretation of the way that Robert Downey Jr. portrays him on the big screen. So I think it's definitely worth checking out. All right, Jay, what do you have up next?
Going back to DC, the series I like, it's not just one. There was more than one graphic novel, but it was called Earth One. So you had Earth One, Batman, Earth One, Green Lantern, and Earth One, Superman. It was just like a fresh concept of the first appearance of these characters and what they did. The art was good. If you just wanted to start with the new idea of the characters, it's a good run. They're all, like I said, they're all online. I think you only get Batman for free, but the rest you got to subscribe to get the rest of the series. But they each are three books. And they had the last one, I think that was Wonder Woman, which is pretty good too.
Yeah, different take on the characters, a more modern take. You could almost describe it as the ultimate version of these characters, like, you know, Marvel had their ultimate line. So, yeah, good pick. Manny, what do you have up next?
I just kind of piggybacking a little what Jay said earlier. Not the same book, but Jimmy and Amanda's Harley Quinn run were pretty much they took the character, and I believe that what the Harley Quinn is, the popularity that she has today has a lot to do with what they did with the character. I know that she was featured also in the video games and then in the movies, but before that there was quite, it became quite the popular book. I know that for Diamond for a couple of years, it was Batman, Harley Quinn books, and then, you know, a couple of different Marvel books, but, it was just a fresh take on the character. On her own, Coney Island, just a different band of characters. And what I really liked about it is just the flawed aspect of her, where I think it was issue 5 or 6, she was trying to make amends for something that she thought was unjust, but she screwed it up so bad. And that's just kind of the character she is. Some of the issues kind of in the 20s where she actually goes back to Arkham and comes face to face with the Joker one more time. That was done really, really well. And it was just fun. It was just a lot of fun. One of my favorite things was when they first started with issue 0, they did that. They did kind of every page with a different artist before they went on ahead and picked Chet Hardin in the end for the series. And it It was great. It was fun. So much was their popularity. I remember when when it came out. You remember the lines, Jace, for Jimmy and Amanda at the convention?
Yeah, Long Beach. Remember Long Beach?
Yeah, I remember it was like first convention of Jimmy and Amanda's table was like walk up, and then post Harley, it was like around the corner, Long Beach. And it was like, what the hell? you can't even walk up to them. They became a star attraction. And yeah, hopefully you pick up some of other Jimmy's work too. I know that Jace was talking about All Star Western, but I also wanted to give a shout out to G.I. Zombie, which I really enjoyed. Yeah. That was a lot of fun. You can read some of these also, same thing, Comixology, you can pick them up on, but you could also DC Universe, the app. If you want to read some of these titles, they're available on there. I think they have some of the Earth ones too to read. It might be a good pickup now just for the books because a lot of the TV stuff is switching over either to the CW or HBO Max, but a lot of quality stuff there.
Yeah, definitely. All right, what do I want to talk about next? I still have so many things on my list. You know what? Let's continue in the vein of my Iron Man recommendation, another classic Marvel character, the Incredible Hulk, another one of my favorites. And I'm specifically going to recommend kind of the Peter David run, which is a run. Peter David was on the character for like 12 years, which even at the time, that just didn't happen anymore. And he had a great understanding of the Hulk. He brought in a lot of concepts with merging the personalities and with Bruce Banner being abused as a kid and just all kinds of concepts that you kind of take for granted as part of the Hulk mythos now. And some of the things that Peter David did, we're seeing repercussions and reverberations in the Immortal Hulk series, the critically acclaimed Immortal Hulk series that comes out currently from Marvel, from Al Ewing and Joe Bennett. So the David run starts with issue 331 and runs till about 466. So it's about 136 issues. It's available free on Marvel Unlimited if you're a subscriber. And when you start talking about some of the artists, so this is some of Todd McFarlane's earliest work at Marvel before he went over to Amazing Spider-Man. So some of those early issues can be a little bit pricey if you want to pick up the hard copies because it is McFarlane art, but it's great. It's fantastic art. I think a lot of people probably, if they're comic fans, have seen the McFarlane cover where Wolverine has his claws popped and the Hulk is being reflected in the claws. That's a real famous cover. And then there's another one where X-Factor come in because the Hulk gets reported as a mutant. And so you have the original five X-Men coming in for a two issue arc to try to capture the Hulk. And then when McFarlane left, you had Dale Keown, who was not on the title as long as I wish he was, because that was right around the time when Image was founded. And, you know, Keown went over to Image and started Pitt, the series Pitt, because he burst on the scene and was a superstar in no time. So he kind of rode the coattails of the other guys that had left Marvel. So following him, you had Gary Frank doing some of his earliest American comic work. So when you talk about going from McFarlane to Dale Keown to Gary Frank, I don't know that there's ever been such a progression of superstar artists on a title ever. I mean, these are guys that are just at the top of their game. Gary Frank still, Dale Keown doesn't do as much anymore, covers now and then. And obviously, we all know about Todd McFarlane. So I really recommend it. Again, it gets to the heart of who the Hulk is as a character. I don't know that there's ever been a writer who's understood the Hulk as well as Peter David. And there's a reason that this title was coming out back in the day, everybody read Hulk. Everybody. It was that good. So definitely check it out. Like I said, available if you have a Marvel Unlimited subscription. 136 issues, 331 to 466. What do you have up next, Jay?
Oh, I was going to say the Incredible Hulk series. Love it. I got the whole run. Another thing I was going to say, too, is Todd McFarlane did the Marvel Tales. I think it was 209 or 222. He did the covers. Yeah. They were just reprints, but everybody was trying to get them. And they're still expensive. But the book I'm going to go with is Chew from Image. Mm. it was when I first read it, I was like, what is this? You know, it was kind of weird, but he had to eat something to figure out, you know, what the crime was with the FDA. It was kind of futuristic. There was no chickens in the world anymore. So you're like, what is this? What's going on? But it kind of takes you in. It was written by John Layman, and the artist is Rob Guillory. And the artwork is unique and fun. The series is really fun. You just got to get more in depth with it. You find out more of the characters, and there's signs in the sky. You're trying to figure out what that means. There's aliens involved, and the ending is pretty good. I highly recommend it if you're into sci-fi or like mystery. And you can get that on Image.
Yeah, I've never read that. I've heard really great things about it, and I've met John a few times. Yeah, I have funny stories about hanging out with John, but I don't know. It's just one of those that I haven't gotten around to reading, and it may be one of those I have to check out. All right, Manny, you're up next. What do you got?
So this one's going to be a little bit harder to to describe because it actually takes place through many different issues. So I'm actually going to go with something you got me for Christmas one year, and that's Batman's No Man's Land storyline. This was back in, what was it? They have a complete version that they released back in 2000, but this takes place in several different books. I mean, Azrael, Agent of the Bat, Batman 563 to 574. Detective Comics 730-741, Nightwing 3539, and just a lot of different a lot of different books. But it's kind of almost what a typical Batman storyline has sort of become. I don't know why they love to quarantine Gotham, but they do it so often. I mean, they did it also in Zero Year. They did it in the TV show. They did it with Arkham in the video game. I mean, and then actually Arkham Knight, they did it too. They quarantined the city as well.
They quarantined the Narrows in the movie.
That's right. Okay, yeah. So for whatever reason, The Dark Knight Rises. They quarantined the city also.
Yeah, Batman Begins. They quarantined it, and Dark Knight Rises. Yeah, they quarantined it.
Jesus, and then in the TV show Gotham as well. So this follows the Cataclysm story arc where a earthquake hits Gotham, and then it follows that, and the U.S. government abandons Gotham. And so what I really like about the story is as you progress, it gives you maps of Gotham City and kind of how it changes. Territories change from different villains. Poison Ivy's a big player, obviously Two-Face, Joker, Bane. What am I thinking? Anyway, it's a really, really great storyline. I remember I got it from you for Christmas, and I think it took me like less than a week to like eat through it all volumes, and you were like, what?
Yeah,
I did.
Like
you're done? This is supposed to last you.
Yeah, it was like seven trades.
If you're going to get the volumes, which you should, it's separated into five volumes. I mean, you have writers from like Greg Rucka, Scott Bealey, Paul Dini, Larry Hama, Jordan B. Gorfinkel, just Chuck Dixon, and just a variety of different artists as well that all worked on this book. But I mean, it's a great typical Batman story, just nice and classic. And then it has a really messed up moment with the Joker and Jim Gordon, but I was like, that's pretty low. There's one person that the Joker loves to pick on is Jim Gordon, and like the poor guy always just so demoralized by it. And what can he really do? I feel for him sometimes. Sometimes I just wish if there's somebody who was going to kill the Joker, I just wish it would have been Jim Gordon.
Yeah, another thing I'll mention about that No Man's Land storyline. So that's where we first see Harley Quinn incorporated into the real DC universe. It's her third appearance because her first one is in Batman Adventures 12, obviously, which is based on the animated series. But that, you know, that's not the DC universe proper. Her second appearance is in the Mad Love graphic novel, again, which is not technically set in the regular DC universe. So the first time she shows up is in the No Man's Land storyline. And the other person who shows up for the first time in No Man's Land is the Cassandra Cain version of Batgirl. She makes her debut there. So there are a couple of issues that are pretty pricey if you want to try to put together the singles. But yeah, like Maddie said, it's available through trade, or you can find it on the DC Universe app, Comixology as well. All right, I guess I'm going to go with DC again on my next one. And I'm going to go with a series that really sort of celebrates the golden age of DC. So if you want to get a feel for who some of the classic characters were back in the day, and then when DC came up with the idea of the multiverse, these were the characters that inhabited Earth 2. And it's All-Star Squadron. There are 70 issues. It ran for 70 issues plus a few, or it might have been 68 issues with a couple of annuals, but right around 70 issues. It's available for free if you subscribe to DC Universe, or you can find it on the Comixology app. So this is written by Roy Thomas. A lot of great people worked on the art, but the one that I'm going to particularly name is Jerry Ordway, who is kind of really came into his own on this series and is known for being able to render these Earth 2, these classic DC characters, even to this day, maybe better than anybody. So his art is absolutely spectacular on it. And it just celebrates a lot of these older characters, these golden age characters. So the All-Star Squadron is a team book, and it's got a lot of the classic characters, you know, the Wesley Dodds Sandman, Stripesy, Firebrand, the Guardian, Dr. Fate, the original Green Lantern, Alan Scott, the J. Garrick Flash. And then at one point, they even do a crossover with Earth X, which is the Earth where the Nazis won World War II, where they bring in the Freedom Fighters from Earth X, who were old Fawcett characters. DC eventually bought Fawcett. So then you have characters like Black Condor and Uncle Sam and the Human Bomb and Living Doll and those kind of or Doll Man, I think he's called, Phantom Lady. So it's a really great way to read some more modern comics, but get a feel for the lore and the history of the DC universe without, you know, going back and buying Golden Age books, which can be expensive and also are kind of hokey. But this gives you a feel for kind of the history and the legacy of the DC universe. And I think it's definitely worth reading. Like I said, Roy Thomas, who's a giant in the industry, in his 70s now, you know, contemporary of Stan Lee. And just it's a really great series. I don't think it's enough credit. Not enough people talk about how good it is. So All-Star Squadron definitely had to make my list. All right, Jay, what do you have up next?
It was how I read last year, I guess. It was Batman White Knight. It was a spin on the Joker actually being not the Joker no more. He's actually, you know, flesh and blood. He's not white face anymore. And he's trying to run for, if I remember right, the mayor or like a senate of Gotham. So he's actually a good guy in the series. Until you get to the end, you kind of figure out, is he really bad or good? And then you find out there's another Harley Quinn. There's two Harley Quinns in the book. The one that thinks she's Harley Quinn's, you know, it's pretty good. It was written by Sean Murphy and Matt Hoggesworth. And when you get the first issue, if you actually get the book, there's two covers. There's a variant, which is kind of hard to get now, but it was 8-issue miniseries. The series did really well that they did a second one. But it was a good read. It was fun. And like I said, it's just a twist because, like I said, they just have him as, you know, a regular guy. You know, he's not bad. He's actually good. And he's trying to build a good reputation for himself. But Batman, you know, knows he's not the good guy. And he's trying to convince Gotham that he's not buying it.
Yeah, it's a great series. And it was so popular. In fact, it spawned its own corner of the DCU that Sean Gordon Murphy's overseeing now. So he writes it, he plots it, he draws it, he inks it. So he does everything except the colors. I think Matt Hollinsworth is actually the colorist on the series. Okay. Everything else is done by Sean Gordon Murphy. And he followed it up with another White Knight series. And there's more to come with us seeing more of the DC universe. This, you know, this own corner of it, if you will. It's this own individual White Knight Earth, if you will. So, yeah, it's definitely popular, and I expect to see a lot more of it. What do you have up next, Manny?
So I have one kind of a little bit out of left field that you turned me on to, and it was just one of my favorite series. And I remember even taking friends to to meet Charles Soule so that they can pick this up. So my pick is Oney Press's Letter 44.
Great pick.
Just such a freaking good book. By Charles Soule, with artwork by Alberto Albuquerque. The premise of the book is there's a new president, Stephen Blades, and on his desk, it's a letter. It's labeled Letter 44 because he's the incoming 44th president. When he opens the letter, though, he's not only welcome to the White House, but by the way, we discovered aliens a couple of years ago, and we have a team that's been flying towards a construct for years now, and they're about to reach their destination. And so it's about his struggle on the ground, learning about alien technology, dealing with the ex-president, and all of the things that go with that, as well as we get to go onto the spaceship that is heading towards this construct. What happens when they get there? And then you get some flashbacks, issues where you learn more about the characters and how they got to where they are. It's just such a good read. It's really, really entertaining. Just a great sci-fi book. It's complete. You can read the entire story.
I'm trying to remember how many, I want to say 37 issues.
Something around there. Yeah. I don't remember how it's all collected, but the artwork is really good, really great expressions, and then also just the colors on it are really bright, and it makes it visually pleasing as well.
Man, that's a great pick. I can't believe I forgot about that one. All right, what am I going to choose next? You know what? I'm going to go with a book that really showed 13-year-old me that comics could be more than just like superhero happy ending kind of stories. And it's called The Vigilante. It ran for 50 issues plus two annuals, so 52 issues. It's available for free if you subscribe to DC Universe. It's also on Comixology. It's about Adrian Chase, who is the second character in the DC Universe to carry the name Vigilante. He first appeared in New Teen Titans Annual Number 2. He is a district attorney, and his wife and kids get killed by a bomb that's planted by the mob as revenge for Adrian putting away a mob boss. And he's lost when the series starts. He's lost his wife and kids, and he's despondent. And it's kind of about his journey. And I've talked to Marv. It's like I said, this is one of those series that just shows you what comics can be, how it can sort of transcend the medium. And I don't want to spoil the ending, but the journey that Chase goes on is really remarkable in a way, but also tragic. And I've talked to Marv about it. He edited the whole thing. He wrote about half of it. Paul Kupperberg wrote pretty much this last third of it, and then in between there you have a few other writers that came in and did individual story arcs, including Alan Moore, who worked on the title for quite a while. But Marv, it was always Marv's story. It was always, you know, any writer that came in understood what Marv was getting at. And the last issue, the way that the series ends, is exactly how it had to end, according to what Marv has told me. It was always the way they planned on ending it. And again, it's really tragic. It's such a great series. It's definitely a mature title. And when you talk about the people that have worked on this book, you know, I've already named Marv Wolfman, Paul Kupperberg, Alan Moore. I mean, we're talking about giants in the industry. And then when you start talking about some of the artists, Keith Pollard, Dennis Cohen, Alex Savak, Gil Kane did some issues. I mean, it's absolutely amazing. Chuck Patton does a couple issues. It's just a fantastic series. It was in that prestige format that at the time when other comics were 65 cents, 60 cents, 65 cents, 75 cents, this was $1.25. You know, it was on that that thicker paper. The colors really jumped off, and it's absolutely incredible. It's still one of my favorite comic series of all time. I highly recommend it. There's a lot of twists, a lot of turns, definitely mature and engrossing and captivating. And yeah, just a heck of a lot of fun. And I know Vigilante, a different version of him, has showed up on the Arrow TV show. I haven't seen that, but my understanding is it doesn't at all do justice to the Adrian Chase version and the comic version. So do yourself a favor, check it out. It's definitely worth your time. All right, Jay, what do you have up next?
Go back to DC. My favorite character is always been Zatanna, because when you read the comic, when she's in there, she does a little magic. It's always backwards, so you kind of try to read it backwards without actually, you know, trying to flip it around. So I always find that fun. The series I like, there's different graphic novels, but they're all written by Paul Dino. And you had he did, like I said, Mad Love, but you also got the title for just Zatanna. And you got Zatanna Shades of the Past, and then you got Black Canary and Zatanna called Bloodspell. They're really fun because you get to more about the character, because she's, you know, she's part of the Justice League, but they really don't focus a lot on her. And she's never really had like her own little series that was really good. So that's why I like the graphic novels. They're entertaining and fun if you want to know more about the character and her past.
Yes, Zatanna's is a character I've never really gotten into. I like the concept of her. I think I just haven't read enough of her or some kind of a definitive series. I just don't feel like I have a good grasp on who the character is. Who do you have up? What do you have up next, Manny?
I have Aftershock's Animosity by Marguerite Bennett and artwork by Rafael Della Torre. I love this book and I hate this book, but my hate is just a very minimal me being selfish. Because there's another book from Aftershock called Super Zero that Jimmy Palmiotti writes with Amanda Connor that he will not continue because Rafael Della Torre is too busy doing Animosity. And he's continued on because the book is really, really popular. I mean, what are you going to do? But anywho, Animosity, the latest issue, I think, just came out in March, and I'm not sure where they're at after that right now. The premise of it, it's one day all of a sudden the animals pretty much they start thinking, they can now think, they can talk, and so now they start taking it to the man, and they kind of rebel against humans and everything they've done to them. One specific girl, Jessie, she's going on a journey to try and find some of her family on the West Coast with their dog, Sandor. And, I mean, they're going from New York City to San Francisco. It's just quite the journey. And I mean, just quite the array of adventures that they have, running into different colonies and different animals that have required different abilities and just kind of seeing the tables turn and seeing humans not necessarily at the top of the food chain is really interesting. And then seeing the way Bennett kind of takes the animals and puts them in different roles in their new society is actually really, really cool. And then just some very disturbing things that happen in between there with actually humans more than anyone else, which is really interesting. An interesting part about the book. It does have another spin-off book that they made, and I don't remember what it is, Animosity Evolution. So there's quite a lot to read there. You can check that out on Comixology. Great artwork, great colors. Obviously, I mean, if it's being done by Della Torre, then obviously it's great.
Yeah, I love the way you put that, where the animals gain sentience and they're taking it to the man. Like, literally
yeah,
taking it to the man. So, yeah, there's, like Maddie said, it's so popular it spawned a sister title, Animosity Evolution. And there's also World of Animosity, which gives you an idea of kind of what's going on in the rest of the world outside the U.S. So, good pick. All right, what do I want to pick from my list next? I'm going to end up with a few honorable mentions because I just wasn't sure. I picked more than 10 titles because I wanted to be sure I had 10 in case other people picked mine. I'm going to go with this title, knowing that this is one of the earliest DC titles that Manny read, And I know if you start reading it, you can have a lot of questions like, who's that character? Where are they from? Blah, blah, blah. And you can totally do the deep dive, and you can Google every character that you come across in the series and learn a lot and gain all kinds of knowledge. Or you can just, like I recommended to Manny, just power through it. Like, just keep going, get to the end, and see if it sparks a desire in you to learn more about the DC universe. And then you can kind of go back. So it is a dense dive. It is a dense read. And that's kind of ironic, because the whole sort of impetus of the series was to clean up the DC universe and to make the DC universe more accessible, and clean up some of the convoluted history of the DC universe. So it's kind of a must read if you're going to be involved in the DC universe on a regular basis and really understand what's going on, because it's a reference now, even though it's been, what, 35 years since it came out. It's referenced all the time. It's Crisis on Infinite Earths, the 12 issue miniseries. And, you know, George Perez art, Marv Wolfman, you know, Dick Giordano, like so many legendary creators helped contribute to this. But really, Marvin did, and George did a lot of the heavy lifting.
Just 12 issues, Jay?
Yeah, it's just 12 issues. But I mean, it's the 12, don't get me wrong, it's 12 dense issues. But this set the foundation for the entire DC universe going forward, until Infinite Crisis kind of reversed what happened in Crisis on Infinite Earths, where all the different, you know, variations and different multiverses and different Earths of DC were all condensed into one to try to make one cohesive timeline. And even after they reversed that with Crisis, with Infinite Crisis, there still were reverberations and things that didn't quite make sense, and that's why Infinite Crisis happened. So even to this day, from Infinite Crisis to Final Crisis to Heroes in Crisis to Death Metal, Snyder's Justice League run is mining things from way back, Crisis on Infinite Earths with the Monitors. So this is a seminal work. It is extremely important to the DC universe. And like I said, if you want to have an understanding of the DC universe overall, you need to read this book. It's a must read. Tell us about when you, like when I gave it to you, man, I said, okay, start with this and just keep reading.
It was, it felt more like homework than enjoying comics, just because I remember it being just even more dense than probably The Dark Knight Returns or Watchmen. And I mean, I kind of enjoyed Dark Knight Returns, Watchmen not as much. But I mean, cause there's just so many things, so many ideas and characters and just, you know, things you need to afterwards go look up. And I know that you're gracious enough not only to provide me with the set of titles, but also just kind of read this also then, also read this, also read that. And I still have those CDs in a trunk somewhere with all of the homework I had to do in order to be allowed on a podcast with you eventually.
Yeah, but I mean, it's how you had to learn, right? I mean,
right? Yeah, I completely agree with you. It's part of DC history, and it's really important, because I think even after this terrible thing that they're doing with
death metal,
whatever metal they're calling it now, it's still going to be important. I mean, you see that they did a Crisis on Infinite Earths on TV, and they're probably going to end up doing something with the movies at some point. And it's going to come up again in comics, because they didn't close the portal right, or the Flash screwed up again and went back in time. And so, but yeah, it's just history, just important. Some things will just never, we're never going to go away. And, you know, that's not saying it's a bad thing. It's just, you know, just like, you know, United States history or Marvel history with Secret Wars and things like that. There's just some books that it's just a must. This is one of them.
Yeah. Did you read it like I did, like right off the
screen? Yeah. As soon as it was on the shelf, I was like, ooh. Yeah. Of course, that classic cover of Superman holding, you know, Supergirl. We're like, no, can't be true. And then you have to read it.
I have that cover.
Oh, yeah. It's a classic cover. I mean, they copy it so many. Marvel copies it. I mean, everybody copies it.
Everybody homages that cover.
You know what? There's actually a fun trivia I found out. There's one DC character that they forgot to put on there behind him. And it's actually a pretty important Justice League member.
I've heard that before. Is it Zatanna?
That they forgot. He just didn't make it.
I've heard this before, but I can't think. I was thinking maybe it was Zatanna. Who is it?
No, it's the Green Lantern.
Really?
Yeah, Hal Jordan is not on that cover.
Wow, because everybody's on that cover practically.
Yeah.
Wow.
I never noticed that.
All right, Jay, what do you have up next?
Well, the one that I really enjoyed growing up, because it was the Brave and the Bold. I mean, from Marvel has Marvel Team Up, so Spider-Man pretty much ran that title. He teamed up with everybody, which was fun. And I think back in when it first came out, it was in 1955 when the series first came out, and it was more. I try to look at some of the old ones, and they're really boring. They were like cop and robbers. It wasn't entertaining. But in issue 28, that's when you had the first appearance of the Justice League. So that's when it became important. So from issue 28 to 30, it was just the Justice League, which was really awesome. Then after that, Hawkman took over. So it was Hawkman plus whoever for a while. And then in issue 70, Batman took over, and he pretty much was a king. So he teamed up with every character in the DC Universe. And the important ones to the not so important ones. And that lasted up to issue 200. So if you wanted to read a team up with Batman with any kind of character you can think of, that's a good series to read. And I enjoy it. I have them all because I had to get them. I'm still looking for 28. I haven't got that one yet, but I do have a 29 and a 30.
Yeah, that's a great pick because you're right. It's classic Batman. It's not like the – because this ended before we really got kind of the Tim Burton or Frank Miller Dark Knight Returns or the Killing Joke before Batman got super edgy. Ended with 200 where Batman teams up with the Outsiders, and they ended Brave and the Bold, and then they started Batman and the Outsiders.
Right.
It was kind of as the replacement. So what I like about Brave and the Bold with Batman teaming up with these different characters is you're seeing a more classic Batman, a little more kind of relatable Batman, as opposed to the Batman that came later where he was a little more dark and edgy, and he was more aloof and he was a little more standoffish. And we saw that continue. And that's the Batman that carries kryptonite in his utility belt in case Superman goes bad. That's the Batman that creates the – the brother eye satellite to keep an eye on everybody. That's the Batman that always has a plan and doesn't really truly trust everybody. Whereas the Batman in the Brave and the Bold is a little more, for lack of a better term, a little more innocent for a more innocent time, more classic.
Yeah, because you Batman. Could, yeah, people trusted him. They worked with him. I mean, like I said, even the Metal Man worked with him. I mean, everybody was with this guy.
Yeah, whereas nowadays people are like, they kind of know, okay, Batman is Batman and we know he's kind of a dick. And we just kind of put up with him because he's Batman. This is before all that, so it's a different.
Well, I got the same idea with Iron Man. Like in the old Iron Man books, I always thought he was kind of standoffish. It's like in the movies, like, oh, he's funny. He's like, no. In the comic book, you would hate him because he was always like a bad guy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. All right, Manny, what do you have up next?
So I just kind of also because I feel like it's a must read, and it probably has to do with the fact that I barely read this for the first time 2 weeks ago. So don't hate me for it. It's only four issues, but I thought about it. Like, it's only four issues, but like it's so beautiful. DC's Elseworlds Kingdom Come by Mark Waid with
Alex
Ross. Amazing artwork by Alex Ross. I mean, it's four issues, and it just took me so long to get through them. Because I just really kind of savor every page and just that just super almost simple and complex storyline at the same time. And when I picked it up to read it, I went into it actually just wanting to get more information on Batman's Batsuit and why it was working, why he had to wear it that way. And then also just kind of, is this something Superman did to him? And then it was, you know what? This is actually a story that shame on me for not having read before already. And so I took the time over a weekend and I just dove into it, and it was fantastic. Everything from, the relationship between Bruce and Lex, the whole thing with Shazam and the capitalism of the Justice League when they go to the restaurant and everybody's dressed up as a different character. I just thought it was done so well. I mean, it's four issues and it's just, you'll leave it It's a work of art. It's beautiful. Both the writing and the artwork.
Yeah, it is one of those must reads. It's another one of those evergreen stories at DC. It'll never be out of print. And it kind of reminds me in a way, it does for DC what Marvel's does over at Marvel. Also Alex Ross, written by Kurt Busiek, which I'm surprised nobody's mentioned. It's not, as in fact, Marvel's not even on my list. I didn't think of it until I was like, ah, yeah, Elseworlds, you know, it's one of those, Kingdom Come, rather. It's one of those Elseworlds stories that absolutely must read. So, yeah, great pick. All right. I am going to pick... I'm going to pick Injustice from DCU, also available for free on the DC Universe app if you're a subscriber, available on Comixology. There's 153 issues total. So this is, again, a different version of the DC Universe where Superman goes a little crazy because of reasons. So I don't want to spoil it for you.
A little?
It happens in the first issue. I mean, what happens is just absolutely brutal, and there's a lot of shock value to it. Mm-hmm. I don't want to ruin it for you. So most of the series are written by Tom Taylor. Brian Buccioletto kind of finished it up for him. And it's like Injustice Year 1, Year 2, Year 3, Year 4. A lot of really, really great artists worked on the title. So I'm not going to name any other than Mike Mayhew is probably my favorite, Mike S. Miller, rather, is probably my favorite artist that works on the series, Tom Derenek and a couple other guys as well. Really, really great. But it's fun. It basically, DC was coming out, and they knew they were coming out with this Injustice video game. And so they contracted Tom Taylor. I think this is his first DC work, might even be his first US work. He's an Australian writer. And so DC contracted him to basically come up with a story. I mean, the video game already had somewhat of a storyline, but Tom really fleshed it out more and made people care. And the Injustice title, rather, it was a pretty big seller for DC. And it's a complete story. Like I said, 153 issues. And it's done really well. If you're a fan of the video games, I think you'll enjoy it. I also think that if you're a fan of just really brutal, bloody stories, you'll enjoy it. And the thing that's great about it is you literally don't need to know anything about these characters to read this. Tom Taylor tells you everything you need to know. I mean, we all know, you know, who Superman is. We know who Batman is. You just need that generic knowledge to just go in and read it. You know the Joker's, you know, a crazy criminal. You know Wonder Woman is an Amazon princess. That's literally all you need to know. And you go in and you read this, and Tom tells you everything else you need to know. And it's done really, really well. And the other thing that's impressive about it, and why I fell in love with Tom Taylor's work, is because it's just a video game comic, you know? Like, at its core, like, that's what you think about. Okay, they're coming out with this video game, so we just need to do a comic to kind of capitalize on the popularity of the video game and maybe try to bring in some crossover fans. And so many times when publishers do concepts like that, they're just kind of throwaway stuff and they're not really that great. And you can read it and whatever, and it doesn't last that long. This lasted 153 issues. And the reason it lasted so long is because it's freaking great. Tom Taylor didn't phone it in. He didn't just say, it's just basically a licensed comic for a video game, and I'm just going to, you know, get my paycheck. No, he dotted his I's and he crossed his T's and he made an incredible comic, super compelling. And they're different versions of the classic characters that you're used to, but they're versions that make sense for the story that he's telling. And they're versions that you could see, you know, you understand, especially if you're into the video game and you understand the events that happened. You understand why they are the way they are. It's just really, really great and a heck of a lot of fun. It's one of those books that you read and you're like, things happen. You're like, oh, damn. Or you get a big smile on your face because the art is so great. And just, it's big. It's over the top. It's you know, a Michael Bay movie on the comic book page. It's really, really great. So definitely recommend it.
Yeah, what makes that book a lot of fun is that then you can finish the book and go play as a character.
Yeah,
I know. Yeah, the game ended up being one of the greatest hits of the year. I have the collector statue and the issue number one that came with the video game still. But that's what made it fun is that you can go play them and then also get kind of an interactive storyline. So not a lot of books that can do that.
Yeah, actually, I'm not a gamer at all, but I do have a Steam account, and the only game I have is Injustice. That's the only game. And I did play the mobile version, and I think I played both the mobile version of Injustice and Injustice 2 for a little while anyway. But just don't have time for video games. But yeah, a little trivia for you. The only Steam game that I own, Injustice. All right, Jay, what do you have up next?
This one's going to be found in Marvel website as well. When I was younger, I would dig through books and set piles of books to find the so I could complete my series. It was the What If series from Marvel. That was a fun series. It was only 47 issues. It came out in 77. Now, the key thing about what it is kind of neat about it today is if you get issue number 10, it's what if Jane Foster became Thor? Guess what? She became Thor. And the other fun one was, you know, what if Wolverine killed the Hawk? That was like, yeah, what if, you know? So that's why as a kid, I had to find him and read him. I wanted to see, you know, what if, how would the universe be in the Marvel universe? And then, of course, Frank Miller did the cover for number 27 is of what if the Phoenix didn't die? Wolverine was supposed to kill her. So I think when you do read that series, you got to have a little more know-how of all the Marvel universe. You got to know the characters and their backstory to actually, you know, appreciate the what if scenarios, I guess. And even if you don't, you're just like, well, what if? So I guess maybe he didn't do it. I don't know. But it was fun. And then they try a second run. It wasn't as good as the first run, though. But it's definitely worth catching and reading it. And it's just funny how, you know, these books aren't very expensive, but that number 10 is worth $200 because, you know, it's Jane Foster as Thor, which she eventually becomes Thor.
Yeah, there's a couple of them that get pretty pricey. I think number one, I think the Conan issue, what if Conan existed in modern times?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Or, the other one was fun was that what if, how this is back in, I think, like 87 or not 89 or something like that, but what if Captain America was, you know, woken up in the 80s?
Oh, I love that. I love that one. I was going to say, that's probably my favorite.
That was fun.
Yeah, that one's really good. It has a really cool cover.
Like I said, I just remember them as being a kid, you know, having to find them all because I wanted the whole series. You know, they weren't very expensive. You just had to go dig them.
Yeah.
And had to find them.
All right, Manny, what do you have up next?
I picked the book that I thought you would pick. So maybe it's on your list. And if not, I'm sure it's on your list. It's just, I know that in the history of comics, there's a ton of books that we can recommend. I'm going to recommend Top Cow's Eclipse.
It is by, not on my list. How did I forget that?
No way. I don't even believe it. Oh, Zach would be so disappointed because you're featured in the book.
No.
In the trade. Are you not?
Yeah,
By Zach Kaplan, art by Giovanni Timbano and Chris Northrup. It's funny because I first learned about this book in a little show in Stockton where Dylan for Top Cow just had one little tiny booth, and as I met Chris, pretty much the premise is. It's a near future where the sun is now humanity's enemy. The solar rays are so bright, so hot that you instantly are just charred alive if you're hit by the rays. So this now causes a few thousands of survivors to live in kind of nocturnal cities. They live underground. They only come out during the day. During the night. And even then there's curfews and things like that. And obviously certain companies, certain people take advantage of that. So what happens when they find out that there's somebody that doesn't get burned? And then also what happens to the scientists that figured out how to battle the sun's rays and the politics between, having that control. And even being allowed to figure out what that's for and how to police it. There's just so much. I mean, it's a really fast paced story. Like there's not really a lot of lulls in it. And then also, I mean, just in some of the chase scenes and some of the fight scenes, just, I mean, you remember Jace, just some brutal visuals of people of different ways that they figured out how to kill people.
Death. Yeah. Just, sun death.
Oh, just visually brutal. And so, you collect the whole thing If you want to check it out, you can read the first issue again for free on the Top Cow website. You can also check it out on Comixology. But I highly recommend it. It's a complete story. It's a lot of fun. It's a little different. And I mean, you're not doing much else. Pick it up.
Yeah, I can't believe I left that off my list. All right, this is what I thought you were going to say when you said you were going to steal one from me. And I'm surprised it's not on your list and you didn't name it. It's Harbinger from Valiant. 25 issues from Joshua Dysart. Art from Kari Evans and various others. It's the introduction of Manny's favorite Valiant villain from the new Valiant, Toyo Harada. And it's just done really, really well. It really shows me what an underrated and underappreciated writer Joshua Dysart is. You're telling the story of these kids, these psyots, as they're called in this current iteration of the Valiant universe, who are analogous to mutants in the Marvel universe. But as much as Marvel is or claims to be the world outside your window, Valiant's even more so. When somebody dies, they stay dead. It's much more realistic. The powers are treated, they're much more rare. Valiant, the universe hasn't been around a long time, so you don't have thousands and thousands of characters with powers. And it's just a very realistic look at what would happen if people actually got these powers, as well as Dysart examining a lot of really heady concepts like capitalism and, the 1% and what it means to be in power and what obligations you have to sort of give back to the world and things like that. So we've had a lot of long, in-depth conversations on our Valiant episodes, including some with Joshua Dysart himself, breaking down Toyo Harada, talking about the series. And so this is where it all starts. The first 25 issues are absolutely spectacular. They're available on Comixology. And again, it's one of those stories that transcends comics. It's so much more than just superheroes and tights and capes. It really is a book that makes you think. And some of the concepts that he introduces to you are again, food for thought. But it's also so well done and fast-paced and action-oriented that if you just want to read it for pure entertainment value, you can do that as well. You're certainly under no obligation to, sit down and think about these things and write a thesis about these concepts at all. So it's a really, really great series. Highly recommend it. When someone's asking me, hey, I'm curious about getting into comics, is there a series you can recommend? There's usually, four or five that I give them, and Harbinger, the first 25 issues from Joshua Dysart is always on the list. So, yeah, I can't believe you didn't put it on your list, Manny.
Well, the thing is, I chose the Valiant kind of as a gateway comic, but I should have put. I thought about it too, and now that I think about it more, and you graced us with the seasonings of all the great things of the story. That is another another gateway. I mean, it leads you to Imperium, also by Joshua Dysart. Then it takes you over to the Rise and Fall of Toyo Harada. And just amazing series like that, and you can spin it off too and keep going. Harbinger Wars, and then go over to Faith, because then from there, she got her own title as well. Really, really good stuff. Another one that I think is a little overlooked sometimes, Secret Weapons, like you're talking about. Not all powers are these awesome things. Some people have really useless powers. Yeah, like there's one guy who can talk to birds.
Yep.
That's his power. Or another guy who turns into concrete, but like it's not very useful. And just things like that. I like it. And I mean, there's a depth to them because of Toyo Harada. I mean, I don't know. I think we've had three or four different two-hour-long podcasts where we talk about Toyo Harada, the character. Is he a villain? Is he not a villain? You know, what's his end game and things like that? Just so much there that you can really deep dive into.
You have any other pick? I know that's 10 for all of us, but does anybody have any other honorable mentions?
Yeah, I guess if you go to like the Marvel website, there's people that want to know like the first appearance of a character. If you actually type in first appearance, you'll get a list like Amazing Fantasy 15. Not a lot of us can afford it, so it's on there. And Incredible Hulk, you know, issue one, and actually issue 102 when it became the Incredible Hulk. And Captain America. So they're all on there if you're looking for first appearances, which I think is kind of neat.
Manny, anything else you want to mention?
This is more than an honorable mention, and I just wanted a variety of different publishers and stuff like that, but I'm such a Top Cow fan and I can't help it. And I know you're gonna be like, why is not on your list? Postal by Matt Hawkins and Brian Edward Hill with artwork by Isaac Goodhart. Just such a great book that also, well, actually it's still ongoing now. They brought it back, but what they're doing now, you don't miss. I mean, just so much drama, so much different things going on in that small town that's secluded. Pretty much, it's a town called Eden where you take your criminals that you don't want in jails, and you kind of almost they're in the middle of nowhere and they live their own lives. Very, very interesting, and it's taken usually from the perspective of a character named Mark Shifron, who also has Asperger's syndrome, which makes it even stranger at some point. But they do a really good job at some of his I call them quirks. Like, for example, if they serve his breakfast a certain way, he freaks kind of, but at other times he's just so assertive and aware of himself. And it's just done so good. And then that can also, it has this really cool,
crossover?
Crossover, thank you. Eden's Fall with Think Tank and Samaritan. Also, what they call the Tide Verse, but apparently Matt said that people couldn't pronounce the name right.
Yeah.
So they changed it over to Samaritan, which is really funny. And just quality writing right there. You could also check it out for free, at the website. One great thing about the Top Cow website, a lot of their books you can check out for free first. And then you can even do like, sometimes they have like these amazing humble bundles that you can get where you can get just a ton of their titles, including some more like older Witchblade stuff, which is also really fun. That's all. I mean, I could talk about Postal for hours, so I'm just going to shut up.
Yeah, I don't have Think Tank on my list either. It's another one of my all-time favorite titles. I'm not sure why I left that off, but yeah, so I'm glad you mentioned Postal. So I have a few more here that I'll mention real fast. So I have Ultimate Spider-Man on my list, which is 133 issues, but also The Amazing Spider-Man, if you want to go back and read the original stuff. I'd say for Ultimate, you want to read from issue 1 to 130-ish, and then a couple of the annuals, and that's basically a modern retelling of Spider-Man by Brian Michael Bendis, with most of the art, most of the pencils handled by Mark Bagley or Stuart Immonen. I will say that, and this is a discussion and a conversation we've had on the podcast many times about which came first, the chicken or the egg, which came first, Brian Michael Bendis's decompressed style of storytelling or the concept of writing for the trade, and that's why Brian writes that way. So, you know, if you look at the first volume of Ultimate Spider-Man, it's basically the story that's told in Amazing Fantasy 15. Bendis decompressed it to the point that it takes 6 issues to do what Stan Lee and Steve Ditko did in one issue. You can debate the merits of that, and you know, we have it at various times. So the fact that you can read Ultimate Spider-Man in big chunks and you're not just reading one issue where you're not feeling satisfied or where you got a big chunk of story, now it's out there, all 133 issues, so you can read it, you can binge it. If you want something that, much like Hulk that I mentioned earlier, Iron Man, really kind of gives you the history of the Marvel Universe, kind of like we say all the time, how goes Superman, so goes the DC Universe. Well, how goes Spider-Man, so goes the Marvel Universe. There could be made an argument for Fantastic Four as well, but if you start talking about reading Amazing Spider-Man from issue 1 all the way up to issue 440, which is right around the time the first volume ended, you're talking about getting your first introduction to characters like the Green Goblin, Dr. Octopus, Gwen Stacy, Mary Jane Watson, Flash Thompson, the Kingpin. You can just go on and on and on and on and on. And also legendary creators, Stan Lee, Steve Ditko, John Romita Sr., John Romita Jr., Jerry Conway, Todd McFarlane, David Michelinie. You know, you can just go on and on and on when you read a big chunk of story. And I know I'm asking a lot for you to read 440 issues of Amazing Spider-Man, but you can pick and choose in there. Obviously, the first 100 issues, the Stan and Steve Ditko who launched it, and then Stan and John Romita Sr., that's classic stuff, man. Maybe go up to around 150. Then you're talking about the death of Gwen Stacy, and you're talking about including the first appearance of the Punisher. So again, classic stuff that really kind of sets the tone and the mood to have an understanding of what does the comic book universe of the Marvel comics look like. You know, I think a lot of people who enjoy the movies have a very good understanding of what the MCU is. They know what the feel and the flavor of it is. I guarantee you, if you read the first 150 to 200 or go all out and read all 440 issues of The Amazing Spider-Man, the first volume, you're going to have a great understanding of what the feel and the look and the tone of the Marvel Universe, the comic Marvel Universe, is like. So I put that on my list, and I wanted to mention it at the end because I know it's a lot to ask. And that's why I also put the Ultimate Spider-Man on there. So if you don't want as much of a deep dive, you can kind of get a modern telling of what it is, because some of those older books, maybe people, you know, the dialogue can be a little wonky. It's dated and things like that. Another couple things I'll mention really quickly. If you're a Star Wars fan, Marvel has a license for Star Wars now. The first 71 issues of Star Wars, the Marvel Star Wars title, which has done really, really well, is available on Comixology as well. And then Manny mentioned this earlier. We mentioned it when we were talking about Crisis on Infinite Earths. If you want an introduction to the Marvel Universe, you haven't really watched the movies, and you're not even really sure who these characters are beyond maybe Spider-Man and Captain America, go read Marvel Superhero Secret Wars, the limited series 1 through 12, also available on Marvel Unlimited for free if you subscribe, or available on Comixology. It's 12 issues. You don't need to read anything before it. You don't need to read anything after it. It's a completely self-contained story. There have been stories that have come after that have pulled from some of the things that happened in the series, especially Venom. And things Jonathan Hickman did in the Marvel Universe with Fantastic Four and Avengers and such. But you can just go and read those 12 issues, and you're going to be introduced to a lot of the Avengers. You're going to be introduced to the X-Men. You're going to be introduced to some of the classic villains in the Marvel Universe, like Doctor Doom and Magneto and Dr. Octopus and so on and so forth. And it's going to give you a good understanding. Everybody gets a little bit of time to shine. Maybe the one downfall of the series, the only thing I don't like about it is the fact that Professor X doesn't really behave like the Professor X that we know. He's really shady in the series for some reason. But it's written by Jim Shooter, art by Bob Layton and Mike Zeck. It's classic Marvel comics of the mid-80s, and I think it'll give you a good grounding and a good footwork if you decide that you want to continue reading titles in the Marvel Universe. So those are the few honorable mentions that I had. So anything else to add, Manny? You're still on mute.
Thank you. It just reminded me of a fun book from Marvel that I enjoyed reading a lot, and that was Dan Slott's Superior Spider-Man that came out 2013 to 2014, where the Peter Parker's consciousness or whatever is taken over by Doc Ock, yeah. And he becomes Spider-Man. That book was a lot of fun, and it's 45 issues, and I recommend it because he starts using a lot more like technology and stuff. He has little like flying spiders, and he has the almost like the Doc Ock. It's not the kind of octopus arms anymore. It's like spider hands, and it's just a good time.
Yep. Jay, anything else to add?
I was just thinking about Spider-Man. My favorite series was Peter Parker, the Sensational Spider-Man. That was fun. I always felt like it was a little more darker, some of those stories, compared to the Amazing Spider-Man. It was fun too.
Yeah, that one also very classic. First appearance of Cloak and Dagger, first appearance of Black Cat, first appearance of Tombstone, especially the Ron Friends or Sal Buscema issues. Again, really, really classic stuff. So, in fact, Mike Avila from Sci-Fi Wire recently did a big reread on Amazing Spider-Man and Spectacular, and he's been tweeting about it lately. So definitely good stuff for sure. All right, well, that's going to do it. I think we've given you tons of choices, all things that are available digitally. Like I said, if you can't get out to your comic shop, or you're stuck at home, you don't want to venture out to the comic shop in these crazy days of a global pandemic, this stuff's all available digitally. We definitely recommend subscribing to the DC Universe app or the Marvel Unlimited app if you want to binge a bunch of this stuff, because your cost per comic is absolutely rock bottom. You know, there's thousands of comics on the DC app, there's thousands of comics on the Marvel app. So you can go Comixology, and there are sales where a lot of times you can get issues for 99 cents or even trades for 99 cents, where you're paying 25 cents or 20 cents per comic. But when you talk about, you know, a monthly subscription to Comixology or a monthly subscription to DC Universe or Marvel Unlimited, you're talking about pennies per issue, which is really cheap for the entertainment value that you can get from it. So definitely recommend doing that. I'll be sure and list all our choices in the show notes. And you can go there and look back over our choices. If you do read any of this stuff, definitely reach out and let us know your thoughts. We always love to hear from you. So thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time. You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.